Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is North Dakota Republican John Hoven, who joins us to discuss the ongoing planting season and the struggles many producers are facing in it. But first, here's this week's headlines. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announced a plan on Wednesday to transform the American food system. An event at Georgetown University in Washington discussed some previously announced resources to expand meat processing capacity, but there was also funding for organic transition and support for urban agriculture in the announcement. Vilsack said the timing of the effort is critical as food consumers and producers recover from the supply chain effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Biden administration says it is beginning trade talks with Taiwan. The talks come as Taiwan has become a growing market for U.S. ag goods. USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service says the nation became the sixth largest market for American producers last year, to the tune of nearly $4 billion worth of imports. Farm groups have been pressing the Biden administration to be more active on the trade front and pursue tariff reductions abroad. U.S. and Taiwanese officials expect to lay out a blueprint for the deal in the coming days. And finally, new figures from the Department of Agriculture showed corn and soybean planting efforts are catching up to recent years after weather-induced delays in many parts of the country. Nationwide corn and soybean acres in the ground so far this year are just 1% behind the five-year average. Major progress was observed over the last week, but some states are still lagging in their effort, including North Dakota and Minnesota. Members of the congressional delegation from those states have petitioned Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack to consider offering payments to offset prevented planting penalties growers might incur for sowing after existing coverage deadlines. North Dakota Senator John Hoven was one of the lawmakers who signed that letter, and we asked him why he thinks his producers will need the assistance he has requested.
Well, what's happening is they're running up against the end date for crop insurance. So, for example, out here on corn, that was May 25th. On wheat, it's June 5th. And, you know, we're a huge producer of all the basic commodities. I think we produce like half the wheat, 70% of durum wheat. I mean, hard red spring wheat, like say 50%. Corn, soybeans. I think we lead the nation, North Dakota, in 14 different major commodities, and we're second, third, a lot of others, potatoes, sugar beets, number one in honey. I mean, all these different things. Minnesota, big producer as well. And for both North Dakota and Minnesota, because of the precipitation we've received here in the spring, which we needed to coming out of drought, but in the eastern part of North Dakota, western part of Minnesota, and some other places around the country, it's too wet to get the crop in. And of course, if farmers go past that end date, then the amount of crop insurance coverage they get diminishes for each day that they go past that end date. And so then as a result, they're going to prevented plant acreage where they actually don't plant those acres. And right now with the problem that we have with inflation across the board and of course food inflation, we need our farmers putting those crops in the ground.
Mm-hmm. So part of the language in that letter was requesting that payments, should they be made from somewhere other than the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation. Am I going out on a limb here to assume that fund that you're targeting there would be the Commodity Credit Corporation?
That would certainly work. And as you know, we've used it in innovative ways in the past to deal with the pandemic, to deal with the trade war that the Chinese put on our farmers and ranchers. So, and of course, obviously I work with that as either chair or ranking member of AgriPulse. So yeah, that's a tool that should be used in this case. And it actually will save the government money and it'll increase the food supply. Now that's a double win. It saves money because the fewer people we have going to prevented plant acreage, that means less government payments for prevented plant. And the more food we produce, the more that helps with food inflation. And of course, that's what will result. And all we're doing is utilizing funds from, say, the CCC or a similar type source to cover that discount that the farmer would otherwise suffer on his crop insurance. So he's incentivized to go ahead and put that crop in, even though he's past that end date and he's fighting wet conditions. And so it really creates the right incentive. It saves money. And I think actually will help increase the food supply.
Mm-hmm. You sent this letter to USDA last week, you and your colleagues from your state and Minnesota did. What have you heard from the department at this point?
That they're seriously evaluating it. I talked to Vilsack Secretary Vilsack, directly about this. So we'd sent him the letter. I called, and I've worked with him. We were governors together. Then he was the secretary, obviously, during the Obama administration. I was in the Senate. We worked together. So we worked together for, 20 years. So I know him well. And I'd informed his people ahead of time. Then we had the bipartisan letter led by myself and Senator Klobuchar. They got that. Then he was at our ag, one of our ag hearings. And of course, he testified in regard to it. And essentially the approach he's taken, which I appreciate, is, okay, we'll look into this and see if there's something there we can do. And I said, okay, but time is of the essence, because we're hitting these end dates. And then my office checked in with Zach Ducheneau, FSA administrator yesterday, who is tremendous. We really appreciate him. Great working relationship. And he said, yeah, they are working on it, and they understand both that, the timeline and why it's important. So we don't have an answer back yet, but they are indicating that there is a serious evaluation being done on it.
We'll be right back to discuss the upcoming farm bill with Senator John Hoeven right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. The Commodity Credit Corporation has been leveraged by numerous administrations in recent years to fund its various farm policy priorities. But does the CCC's funding keep up with its demand? We discussed with Senator Hoeven.
Well, first off, as you say, it's a high, very, very important high priority fund. In the Farm Bill, the number one risk management tool that our farmers and ranchers, farmers have is crop insurance. It starts there, right? But then the nature of the Farm Bill is built on a counter-cyclical approach, whether you look at PLC or you look at ARC. The whole idea is when the producer needs assistance, that assistance is there because of all the challenges they face with weather and everything else, trade, you name it, that they don't control, but that when they don't need it, it's not there. So that's what's most cost-effective for the taxpayer. And remember, we have Americans spend less on their food supply than any nation in the country as a percent of their budget. And they have the best food supply, highest quality, as I say, lowest cost. So all those benefits stem from the fact that we have a farm bill where we built these programs the way we built them. So the CCC is an integral part of that. And whether it's for those programs, as well as some of the conservation programs that really work for our farmers and ranchers, that fund has to be there. So yeah, I think that is something we should look at. Is it funded adequately? Are we deploying it the right way? And yes, it is not only vitally important for all those reasons, but it is a tool used wisely that enables us to respond to conditions that we can't anticipate, which we saw with the China trade war on our ag producers, and which we've seen with the pandemic and so forth. So that's why it's very important source of funding. It needs to be used wisely and well, but we need to have that tool for our farmers. And actually, like I say, it's the most cost-effective approach for our taxpayers as well.
So sticking with the theme of funding, obviously in the very, very early stages of the development of the 2023 Farm Bill, but we have seen some commodity groups, some farm groups hint at the fact they might be pursuing higher reference prices. Early indications are the nutrition title is going to be much more expensive and potentially take up a much larger part of that farm bill pie. Are you and your colleagues on Capitol Hill going to be able to accomplish the goals that you have for this upcoming legislation, absent the infusion of some kind of new money into the bill?
Well, you have to adjust reference prices based on market conditions. That just makes sense to have a viable program. That being an ag reporter. And already nutrition is 80% of the program, okay? So in the Farm Bill, when people talk about it's interesting, it's the Farm Bill, right? But only 20% actually relates to production agriculture. 80% is already these various nutrition programs, which are very robust, as you say. We'll work through that. I'm not exactly sure where that goes. Obviously, you've seen some of the back and forth just in the regular appropriations process. But, like I say, already nutrition's a very big part of by far the biggest part of the farm bill. Mm-hmm.
But absent new money, I mean, are you going, what challenges are there to, you know, you mentioned the merits of potentially raising those reference prices, but can you do that if you don't get new money into this bill through some influx of new funding?
Well, just based on inflation, obviously there's an adjustment factor, but I think the challenge is to figure out what programs, listen to our farmers and ranchers, listen to the producers, the people that are actually doing it, okay? And then making sure we have the right programs in there. And then, you know, we'll figure out, what it's going to take to get the job done. Designing it to be counter-cyclical. So again, it works best for the taxpayer as well. We'll see what those needs are. But, you know, we got to be mindful of the debt and deficit as we do it. Mm-hmm.
Got about a minute left here, Senator. And I want to ask you quickly, Secretary Vilsack announced on Wednesday a plan to transform the U.S. food system. Do you think the U.S. food system is in need of transformation?
Well, right now we got real supply chain issues. As you know, we just passed the Oceanic Trip Shipping Container Bill, which was something that Senator Thune and Klobuchar and I worked on. We've got to knock those supply chain problems out of the equation. This administration is doing way too much in the regulatory front. There has to be an understanding of production agriculture versus some of the organic and the, you know, gardening type of things in terms of the true food supply. And we have to do these things if we want to really bring food inflation down. Our farmers and ranchers can do it, but you can't handcuff them. You got to empower them. And so I think that that's the key. And what I'm seeing is that they're coming forward with some of these initiatives, which I think are challenging. They don't really go to the underlying issue of expanding, you know, overall food supply in a big way. At the same time, then our farmers and ranchers are facing a lot of these hurdles from things like reimposing WOTUS and these other regulations that actually hurt their ability to produce more food for the American people. Mm-hmm.
Plenty of things going on when it comes to farm production and farm policy. Senator Hovind, we appreciate you joining us.
But we got to finish, Spencer. Every American, every single day, from the highest quality, lowest cost food supply in the world provided by our farmers and ranchers. And that's what good farm policy is all about. It's not just about our farmers and ranchers. Every American benefits from it.
Very good. Senator Hovind, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back to discuss this week's news with our panel. But first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at planting season progress in this week's Map It Out.
Farmers have faced many challenges this planting season as they work to put a corn crop in the ground. Cold temperatures and rainy conditions made it difficult for farmers to get into fields and start planting. According to USDA's latest weekly crop progress report, 86% of the nation's expected corn crop is now in the ground, which almost makes it in line with a five-year average pace. But planting progress is still running well behind in some parts of the upper Midwest. According to an analysis by the Senate Agriculture Committee's minority staff, about 2.9 million acres of corn in North Dakota and Minnesota have yet to be planted, along with 1.2 million acres in Illinois. The analysis is based on USDA's planting intentions released in March. North Dakota farmers are not just behind in planting corn, but also spring wheat. North Dakota usually accounts for half of the U.S. production of spring wheat, and only 59% of the state's expected crop is in the ground. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Excited to be joined this week by a panel of experts to discuss the planting season and the Farm Bill implications that might come from it as a result. Joined this week by Mary Kay Thatcher from Syngenta and Scott Gerlitz with the American Soybean Association. And Scott, I want to go to you first because it's been a bit touch and go. This planting season has been across the country, and really in some particular parts of the country, a lot of issues getting a crop in the ground. I know we've seen some figures from the Department of Agriculture, but what is the latest that we can see in terms of production figures and planting actual plantings across the country?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Spencer. We have been seeing saw a slow start to plantings, but they've largely caught back up for both corn and beans. With soybeans, we're about 2/3 done, of course, higher on that with corn. Really, the main area that's behind right now is North Dakota. They've been very wet, but we've seen farmers just really be able to make up quite a bit of ground. Of course, there is some concern on the corn side with some of the later plantings. Could that pull down yields? And the last WASD, USDA had corn yields down four bushels an acre from trend, just because of late plantings. But farmers, with the equipment they have now, if conditions are good, can make up a lot of time, and they have. Soybeans should be okay as far as planting dates. That shouldn't impact yields too much at this point. So we're really looking more towards weather for the soybean yield side. But it will be interesting to see here at the end of this month, whenever USDA releases the June acreage report, what actually gets done. Looking at the planting numbers and some of the original intentions, there's a fair amount of uncertainty about what some of those acres could look like and some of the delayed planting impacts on those.
Well, and we talk about delayed planting, Scott, because we look at there was a number of corn planting dates for preventive planting that have mostly come and gone across the country. Still a couple upcoming here. The soybean planting dates still yet to come in a few instances. Any concern that you're hearing about potential missing of some of those soybean planting dates due to the same weather issues that caused folks to miss the corn dates?
For the most part, no. I think, soybeans are at the 5-year average planting pace right now. So we're at a good pace. Now, North Dakota, again, going back there, they're well behind just because they have been so wet. So I think there is more concern up in that area. But in general, I think soybeans are on a good pace. If the weather holds and conditions remain favorable for planting, I think we'll be in good shape for the most part to hit those crop insurance dates.
Okay. Mary Kay, I want to bring you into the fold here because we're currently at a time where we're looking at high domestic commodity prices, uncertain domestic production due to weather, really volatile international demand due to a number of factors. And in the midst of all that, Congress is trying to write a farm bill. Wondering what you anticipate will be the impact, if any, on some of these current, on the farm bill due to some of these current conditions that we're seeing.
Well, Spencer, that's always the question. I mean, you know as well as I that you always write a farm bill for the circumstances that are ongoing. It's not a very good idea, but it happens every time. And so if you were writing it this year and prices were high, we'd have trouble convincing urban members of Congress that indeed we have some issues here, no matter whether we talk about high input costs or not. Next year, it's looking like farm income is going to go down. Who knows what's going on in Ukraine? So that's very unknown. But I think a couple of really big factors to look at, maybe three factors would be, one, what is the economy? What does the farm economy look like when we're writing the farm bill? We're really seriously writing it in 2023. Two, who controls the House and the Senate? I think very different opinions. If the Democrats control the House and the Senate, I expect a lot of attention on the climate change issue still. Not so much, probably not totally ignoring, but probably not as much from the Republicans. And then, the third thing would just be, what kind of money do we have? And the big issue is really still, in my mind, whether or not that $27 billion in the Build Back Better bill comes true or not. If it does, and you have $27 billion more in conservation programs that could potentially be spent there or elsewhere in the bill, that's a whole different story than starting out with the zero-sum farm bill.
We'll be right back to discuss the future of the Farm Safety Net and the actual production expectations for this year with Mary Kay and Scott right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. It's always a balancing act getting the urban support and rural support for the farm bill, but certain things make that a little bit more difficult, including high commodity prices. Syngenta lobbyist Mary Kay Thatcher says in this time of high prices, it'll be critical to generate urban support for those programs.
Well, I think it is a problem because oftentimes the press doesn't really report the high input costs. Now, this year, I think they've done pretty well. But you get, you know, the big time papers and they'll talk about the high prices that we're getting for commodities, but they don't necessarily cover those high input costs. And so I think we're going to have to do that. I know I preach this every time I talk to somebody, but, you know, we have a lot of education to do. And especially if you look at the Democratic side of the House Ag Committee in these elections, we've already got 4 or 5 members of the Democratic side of the House Ag that have left the committee, have said, I'm going to retire, have already retired, et cetera. And then you've got another 8 or 9 that are in really tough reelection rates. So probably half of the 25, 26 House Democratic members, you know, could be in some real trouble, and there will be changeover. Now, we know whether it's Republicans or Democrats, there's a lot of people that have been on the House Ag Committee before, and they get off when it's not a farm bill year because it's not as exciting. So I think we could see some of those folks come back. But again, we are losing Democratic members in the House, the moderate rural Democratic members. And that's a problem because we can't pass a farm bill without bipartisanship. So we need the folks like the Sherry Bustoses of the world that have represented the Quad City areas to be able to go to her colleagues and explain when sometimes we can't get in those offices.
Mm-hmm. Scott, one of the things that the administration has suggested, you know, in light of the global issues that that American production is going to be facing this year, is potentially allowing some double cropping to take place throughout the country on an expanded amount of acres. What do your figures tell you about the amount of double cropping that could be happening this year compared to what we've seen in previous years?
Yeah, the incentives seem to be there to double crop this year. High winter wheat prices, high soybean prices. So, you know, going into the fall, if prices remain like this, there seems to be a good and strong incentive there. Typically, we double crop about 5% of soy acres, and you know, generally more in the southern southeast U.S., of course, where the growing seasons are longer. But yeah, if conditions continue like this, I wouldn't be surprised if we do have some uptick in double crop acres. Just because of the profitability, but especially if there are extra incentives, if the crop insurance side becomes easier, obviously that'll help. You know, the $10 per acre extra crop insurance subsidy seems to be off the table at this point, but expanding crop insurance counties, you know, could relieve some of the administrative burden with double cropping. Now, those farmers could potentially have signed written agreements with RMA before. So they could have potentially gotten crop insurance already, but this would eliminate some of the need for that extra step.
Mm-hmm. And quickly here, as we look at some of the planting concerns, planting delays and planting fluctuations, Scott, I know USDA's projections earlier this year called for, I'm looking at it now, 91 million acres of soybeans, a record 4.4 billion bushels in production. How do you feel about those figures at this point?
That's pretty exciting sitting here on the soy side. I will say immediately after that report, I was a little bit skeptical that we would get there because we saw markets respond, frankly. We saw corn prices improve relative to soy after that report, as the market seemed to be trying to bid some of those corn acres back. Even though we've had a low soybean to corn price ratio, the high input costs, as Mary Kay was mentioning, particularly with fertilizer, have really been encouraging soy. So I thought we may not reach some of those levels initially in that report, but with the planting delays we've already discussed, that by itself could push more acres back to soy. So where I was originally thinking maybe we wouldn't quite hit some of those soy numbers, I'm not quite as sure now. I think weather could push some of it back. So I'm hedging a little bit here because I think there is a lot of uncertainty just given the wild market swings we've had, the planting issues we've had. So when we get to June 30th, I think that's going to be a fairly interesting report that could surprise us quite a bit as well as far as what the actual acres end up being.
Okay. Mary Kay, I want to wrap things up with you because you mentioned earlier in your discussion that you're expecting, you know, depending on who's in control of Congress, of course, the midterm is going to play a big role in that. But either way, you're expecting climate to play a role in this upcoming farm bill. Wondering, do you think it rises to the level of something like a climate title in the legislation, or do you think there's just an enhanced focus in some of the existing farm bill structures that are already in place?
Oh, I'm not sure it really matters, Spencer. So what if it's a title or it's in there by itself? I mean, somebody will take it if they're spread throughout the bill. Somebody will take it and make a page and says, here's all the good climate stuff. But I can't believe we'll write the farm bill without having some look at climate change. But I do think the extent to which we do climate change has very much to do with whether or not we get that $27 billion in new funding, because I think the commodity title, the crop insurance title, are going to need every penny they've got now. So, you know, no new money to be able to do that. And certainly the nutrition title is sort of projected to be over the top as far as cost. So I do think it's far more related to whether we have the money to be able to do it and whether or not you have a Democratic or Republican House and Senate.
Very good. Well, obviously, the current production is impacting the future policy as we sit here right now. Plenty of things to keep an eye on as farmers work to get a crop in the ground and as Congress works to get a farm bill into legislation. So, Scott and Mary Kay, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Hannah Pegel does a little farm bill math in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
As lawmakers prepare to write the next farm bill, the nutrition title is one area that's going to get a lot of attention. The Congressional Budget Office recently released farm bill spending estimates, and the CBO projects the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program will cost $531 billion from fiscal year 2024 to fiscal year 2028, which is the five-year period expected to be covered by a new farm bill. You can see that by this column here. The CBO projection represents a big increase from when the 2018 Farm Bill passed. At that time, the Congressional Research Service estimated the 2018 Farm Bill's nutrition title, which includes SNAP and other programs, was projected to cost $326 billion over fiscal years 2019 to 2023, or about 76% of all Farm Bill spending, which is represented by this other column. You may be wondering, what could be driving up the cost for SNAP in the next farm bill? Well, it's due to the combination of the COVID-19 pandemic, which drove more people into the program, and increases in the benefit calculation called for in the 2018 bill. In 2021, the Biden administration announced an update to USDA's basic estimate of food costs called the Thrifty Food Plan. This was used to help calculate SNAP benefits. Unless new money is added to the farm bill, nutrition programs like SNAP could account for an even larger percentage of the legislation's total spending, and that could spark some new farm bill political battles. Philip Brasher has the latest in his story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Ag by the Numbers, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. Congress will be back in town and bring with it a pair of farm bill oversight hearings on the agenda. The House Ag Committee plans to look into the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program in a Wednesday hearing, then has a Thursday review on the agenda to look into the commodity title and crop insurance. On the other side of Capitol Hill, a Senate Ag Subcommittee plans to get together on Tuesday for a hearing on the Western drought. Stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest on these hearings and more that is expected to unfold throughout the next week. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.